With the roar of the beast, Godzilla announces his reign over the cinematic battleground once again, and this time he returns from the depths to face off against three of his greatest foes in Mothra, Rodan, and the mighty King Ghidorah. Still, despite these mega beasts back on screen after all these years, fans seem hesitant to eat up all the monster action. This week, we welcome back the king of all things kaiju, Ben Dauer, to talk about the importance of the franchise and the differences between Eastern and Western monster mashes. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Screenfish Radio, we're thrilled you could be here this week as we talk about Godzilla, King of Monsters. And this week we have back the true King of Monsters, Ben Dauer, Godzilla aficionado, a man of all things kaiju. Ben, welcome back.
Thank you.
I am so glad you're here because you can help translate this movie for me.
I hope so.
Godzilla, King of Monsters has seen the return of the most beloved beast, and when members of the cryptozoological agency Monarch face off against a battery of god-sized monsters, including the mighty Godzilla, who collides with Mothra, Rodan, and his ultimate nemesis, the three-headed King Ghidorah. When these ancient super species, thought to be mere myths, rise again, they all vie for supremacy, leaving humanity's very existence hanging in the balance. Just a reminder for you at home that this podcast is rated S for spoilers. So if you haven't seen it, you should know that we're getting into plot details, however few there may be.
Dr. Serizawa dies.
Oh, okay, that was fast. And there it is. But hope you turned that off early then. Ben.
I'm sure everybody listening knows that already.
Well, if not, they do now. Ben, what did you think of Godzilla, King of Monsters? I know you're a huge Godzilla fan. I should say this before you talk, that of course, I am fond of the big lug. I am not the fan that you are. So this could be some interesting conversation. But what did you think of King of Monsters?
I enjoyed it more than the 2014 one. I thought it was fun. I thought it carried some of the more problematic elements of the 2014 one over and continued them.
That it continued the problems
continued
from the
some
first
of the
one.
Some of the problems. Not all the problems.
Oh, I
some
can't
of
wait to hear
it.
Okay, keep going.
But it was more fun, and it's a sequel, so they're a little more forgivable in my mind.
Okay.
It's different from establishing the monster, you know what I mean? Like, there's... I could let it go more this time than the last one. So okay. I enjoyed it more, but I've only seen it once, and I would have said that after I watched the last one, that I really enjoyed it, but on multiple viewings and getting more familiar with it.
You did not enjoy
I did not enjoy the 2014 one. No.
You said that to me after we watched it, you didn't like it. I told
did
you,
I?
Yes, you did. You told me right off the bat. Because you and I saw
that.
That
I remember
one
being
together.
Hyped about it.
You were very hyped about it. We saw it together, and you
been
didn't
a long
like
time.
It
took so long to make a sequel. I'd forgotten how I reacted to the last one.
I think you said you have to see it again.
I think I did. Yeah, probably the same thing.
Yeah, but I mean, you were not as hyped on that one as you were on this one.
No.
So, what are the problems that you saw in that one?
The 2014 one.
In the 2014 one, that you thought continued or were issues that needed to be fixed.
Okay, I'm gonna have to do a bit of history on this.
Since the dawn of time.
Okay, so basically, the first Godzilla movie was made in 1954, and that's just 9 years after the war ended.
Right.
At the end of the war, the Allies finally got close enough to Japan to begin actually bombing the mainland. It was something they couldn't do most of the war. And they dropped incendiary bombs on the Japanese cities. On March 9th and 10th, that night, the U.S. firebombed Tokyo in an operation called Operation Meeting House, and it was the single most destructive air raid during the whole of World War II. 16 square miles of Tokyo burned to the ground and killed an estimated 80,000 people.
Wow.
And made over 1 million homeless. And they just continued this all through the city, Osaka, Kobe, so on and so forth.
This is before the nukes.
This is before the nuclear weapons. Of course, as we know, on August 6, 1945, at 8:15 a.m., the Enola Gay bomber dropped the Little Boy bomb on Hiroshima. And the estimates of the death toll vary widely. We don't have a way to calculate who died instantly, who died in the following days, but it's at least tens of thousands.
Right.
In that one bomb. And people still suffer from the effects today, the radiation, the burns, and all that. And again, they repeated it on Nagasaki on August 9th. Following the war, the Allies occupied Japan, and there's strict censorship. You couldn't talk about the bomb. The images were not allowed to be published of how the people were, dealing with the after effects. And even the fire raids were like, no, you don't talk about the fire raids. And that ended in 1952.
Okay.
In 1954, the Americans tested a hydrogen bomb on Bikini Atoll. It's a small area off in the Pacific, right? And the bomb's yield was 2.5 times more than predicted.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Fallout from the bomb fell on residents of nearby islands, as well as a Japanese fishing ship.
Okay.
The Daigo Fukuryu Maru, which means the Lucky Dragon number 5. Crew member and chief radio operator Aikichi Kubayama died in September following that.
Okay.
From the radiation poisoning and general weakening. I've seen the boat. The boat's on display in Tokyo now. Before he died, he said, "I pray that I'm the last victim of an atomic or hydrogen bomb."
Mm.
Now, the Bikini Atoll test took place on March 1st, 1954.
Okay.
And at that time, Toho really needed to make a film. They
hadn't started production.
No, a co-production with Indonesia just fell apart, and producer Tomoyuki Tanaka was kind of in a panic. Like, they got to replace this on their slate, right?
Yeah.
So he came up with the idea of a monster film inspired by The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms and the Lucky Dragon incident.
Okay.
Ishiro Honda was selected to direct the film. Eiji Tsuburaya was chosen to do the special effects, and Akira Fukube was chosen to do the music.
Mm-hmm.
These four men are the Godzilla fathers. That's what we call them. Without any of them, we'd be in a different place with these movies. Ifukube was really important. He set the soundtrack, of course, the mood, which he's composed for many Godzilla films. His music was even in Godzilla, King of the Monsters.
Okay, yeah, I heard that they used a lot of the traditional themes.
That's mostly his. yeah. Mothra's theme is not, but Godzilla's is. And he also made Godzilla's roar.
Oh, okay.
With a leather glove on a contrabass reverberated.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
He was like a sound genius. The director, Honda, spent time in the Imperial Army, drafted in 1934, survived the war, but turned really anti-war and strongly humanist from his experiences.
Okay.
You can see this humanism throughout most of the films he directed for Toho's Godzilla series and other monsters. So basically, they made this Godzilla movie as an anti-nuclear statement.
Right, the original.
The original.
Was, yeah.
The shots of Tokyo burning mirror the fire bombings.
Mm.
The skyline's literally on fire in the film, with Godzilla's silhouette moving through the buildings. Mm. Of course, Godzilla's spitting radioactive fire, so there's a scene after Godzilla's destruction where the city's, like, flat. They show it looks almost like you could have taken it out of a Hiroshima photograph.
Wow.
The way they redid the destruction. There's a shot of a doctor holding a Geiger counter to a child and it going crazy, and he just shakes his head. The kid's radioactive. You know, he's done. You know, like.
Yeah.
He'll get sick and die. The first Godzilla movie is not a happy movie.
No. The first one is a true example of post-war sci-fi in a lot of ways.
Yeah, in a lot of ways. And it was one of the few ways Japan, and one of the first ways Japan has dealt with the bomb in film. It's right. Even after the censorship ended, there wasn't a lot of films made addressing that.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
So that's where Godzilla comes from. Now, back to the problems of 2014.
Yeah. Let's fast forward 60 years.
Yeah. So.
People at home are going, that's not what he asked.
Yeah, I know.
We're getting there. You need this background.
Most people don't know this background.
That's fair.
In 2014, Godzilla is not the result of American nuclear testing.
I thought he was.
No, he is just an ancient super species.
Oh, you're right.
Was awakened by a deep sea submarine expedition.
But the nuke is what awakens him in the 2014, because a nuclear plant is key.
That's Muto.
Oh, that's Muto.
That's the enemy. which is also interesting to point out. But no, it's a deep sea submarine expedition. I actually put the film on the other day and made sure to get it all exactly right. And then when Joe and Ford go into the quarantine zone, they quickly discover it's not radioactive, again removing any sense of danger from the sort of nuclear incident. And this movie was made only 3 years after the Fukushima meltdown. People were still dealing with the after effects of that. So it's another way that the American film sort of tones down the effects of nuclear danger. Then there's a whole scene in Hawaii where he creates a tsunami that a child and dog ridiculously manage to escape, but it kills scores of faceless adults.
That's in 2014?
2014.
I have to watch that one again.
Nothing is made of this, and it's simply disaster porn, again exploiting the 3/11 disaster.
Right.
Throughout the film, nuclear weapons are constantly treated as tools, only becoming dangerous when they fall out of American control.
Okay. I did not pick that up. Yep.
There's a terrible, I wrote here in my notes, appalling special feature on the home video release that expands on the nuclear attack on Godzilla over the main credits of the film. It says that specific attempt to kill Godzilla took place on March 1st, 1954, and was codenamed Operation Lucky Dragon.
Which is reminiscent
of the boat.
Right.
So they're actually calling the test that irradiated the boat, codenamed it after the boat. So that's kind of insensitive.
Yeah, I could see that.
Like, you know, that's...
That's funny. You didn't mention that when we talked about it before. I never picked up on that one before.
I hadn't actually watched the special features. I was just watching them. I was like, oh my goodness, they didn't do that, did they? I was horrified. And then when the bomb explodes at the end of the film, remember, they have the bomb, they get it out, they get on a boat. It does so with no consequences whatsoever.
Hmm.
When Ford boards the boat docked in San Francisco, it is shown that there is just 13 minutes until detonation. There is not enough time to move that bomb a reasonable distance from the city. Yet, despite the bomb exploding just off the coast of San Francisco, people are shown going through the rubble of the city rescuing survivors the next day, and there is no hint of the toxic fallout that would have rained radioactive death on them. Also, Ford survives the blast, despite it being said earlier in the film they have no extraction plan. So again, atomic bomb goes off, no consequences.
This is fascinating to me because when I've asked you the problems before, you've never mentioned anything political.
No.
So this is the first time you've mentioned anything political about the film. I've really dug into
it. I was aware of it, but I hadn't actually dug into it. And parts of it made me feel uncomfortable. But these are the core elements that really, truly bother me. And if you watch Godzilla 98, the French are blamed for the nuclear tests that create Godzilla, and America is the victim.
Well, Godzilla 98 was basically Jurassic World.
It was. But it's the same. We see the same theme here.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. But so what you're saying that these problems continued on in the new film.
Yes. The Monarch outpost to monitor Godzilla is codenamed Castle Bravo, which is the H-bomb test that buried the Lucky Dragon number 5.
Okay.
The Oxygen Destroyer.
Yeah.
You and I have talked about this, but we podcast. At the end of the first film, a character named Dr. Sarazawa has invented this weapon of mass destruction called the Oxygen Destroyer.
Right.
And it's used to kill Godzilla. But before he uses it, he makes a big fuss about not revealing it because he doesn't want the world to have another weapon of mass destruction.
You're talking about the original film.
The original, 1954. Yes. He doesn't want the world to know of his weapon. But with Godzilla, he's kind of forced into a spot where he has to reveal it and use it. So he burns his notes and commits suicide with the weapon. And when he sees the weapon's working, he kills himself, taking the secret of the Oxygen Destroyer with him. The statement's obviously anti-nuclear. The film ends with Dr. Yamane, one of the other main characters, saying, if we keep testing nuclear weapons, maybe another Godzilla will appear somewhere again in the world. For Godzilla 2014, the Oxygen Destroyer comes out of nowhere. The American military just says, yeah, we'll use it. Boom. No thought. It's a cavalier attitude towards weapons of mass destruction in the American films. That's, I guess, how I would describe it. And they just use Oxygen Destroyer.
But is that problematic, or is that a commentary? This is the question here. Do you think that it's... Now, you could argue
I think
that
it's a cultural aspect.
I think there's a cultural aspect is there for sure, but...
Yeah.
But can you argue as well that there's some form of critique on that one, or do you think that it was just sort of...
Well, I think it was meant to be fan service, basically.
Okay. Okay.
You know, oh, the Oxygen Destroyer. We
there
know that.
It is. Yeah.
But the way it's used, suddenly the general comes up. We're going to use the Oxygen Destroyer. You got a few minutes to get out of there. Like, what? The whole original film was, I don't want to use the Oxygen Destroyer. 1954.
Right. No, that's fair.
I don't want to use it. And even when they ask him to use it, he says no, and he tries to destroy the notes right then and there, so they can't make him make it. So it's a totally different approach. And then there was Dr. Sarazawa's death in Godzilla,
King of Monsters.
Yeah. He sacrifices himself, like the original Dr. Sarazawa, sacrificed himself. But in the original film, he sacrifices himself to kill Godzilla and keep the secret of his weapon of mass destruction a secret.
And in this one, he
actually takes a nuclear bomb and detonates it.
To save them.
To save Godzilla. To do, again, a tool. A useful tool.
This is fascinating to me because I just expected you to say the first one had not enough monsters.
It had that problem,
and here
too.
We are.
It had that problem,
15 minutes in, and it's this geopolitical argument, and I'm like, my gosh, this is far more in detail. Now I'm having a hard time arguing with you because it all makes so much sense.
Yeah. Now, these are only small things. Again, I haven't seen Godzilla King of the Monsters multiple times, so this is what I could pick up out of one viewing. I'd have to go through it again and carefully analyze other little aspects of it, or maybe little details. Like the Castle Bravo for the Monarch Outpost is easy to miss. It's written on screen, Outpost Castle Bravo, right? Boom, gone. I picked up on that, but I mean, sure, other people missed it. Other people don't even know what that means. So the Castle Bravo reference I really didn't like, especially after the Operation Lucky Dragon of the last film.
See, you know what's crazy to me is, again, as we talk about this here, I didn't know any of the history going into this. I knew the first one was a critique of American, use of the nuclear bomb. I knew that. Yeah. That's, like, so obvious and such a clear thing in the 1954 version whatsoever.
Yeah.
But all these subtle references I wouldn't have picked up. I really liked the 2014 version, but I didn't know all of this. What I liked the most in the 2014 version was how Gareth Edwards, took so much from things like Jaws, how they build horror. And that's all you and I argued about.
That's all we argued about initially.
At the time, right, this is how the structure of the films works. Yeah. You're supposed to show Godzilla at this point of the film.
Yeah, and I still have problems with that. We could discuss that too. But
yeah, but this is really interesting.
This is the stuff that really bothers me deep down because it's a complete inversion of Ishiro Honda's philosophy, the director of the original film.
Yeah, but it's also a different culture that's giving it. This is where cultural appropriation becomes.
But can you see the irony of America making a Godzilla movie?
That's true. But Toho was involved in this.
Toho was, and it kind of surprised me they let this go. But,
I remember when 98 came out, and I was just, like, I was never a huge Godzilla fan. I like Godzilla. I like a half-decent monster movie. I like the King Kong movies, and I know, yes, they're separate, but now they're together.
Now they're together.
And I remember when they came out with one in 98, and I loved Godzilla 2000 when it came out, like, the next year or something like that. I had a blast. Yeah, that one was a good one. And that was like Toho's like, we're going to, screw you for ruining what we made. Because 98 was just so bad in just about every way.
But it was fun.
No, it wasn't even fun.
I have fun watching
it. It was barely fun.
Maybe it's because I was 12.
The baby Godzillas were raptors.
I didn't like. There's problems with it too, but I guess there's a nostalgia factor.
Problems with it. There's very little right with it. It's just
there's
a boring,
right
boring, stupid movie.
That was more fun than 2014.
See, I liked 2014 because I felt like it was really trying to build me a character and a story. And even, Godzilla was this epic mythic creature and, how do we stop this thing? But, and I don't care that they didn't show me the monster. I didn't want to see the monster till the end, but that's how I'm conditioned. Well, yeah, but I'm going to see Jaws. You're going to see the shark. You don't want to see the shark in the first 3 minutes.
Well, the original Godzilla film starts off with he's sinking boats, which is, again, a direct reference to the Lucky Dragon number 5.
Right.
The boat fishing boats are out there, so the sea lights up, which is what the crew described the Lucky Dragon. They saw a second sun rise, they describe it as. And so the sea lights up, the ship bursts into flames and sinks. That's how the first Godzilla starts. Later on, he attacks a small island with some villagers there. Mm. And you get a glimpse of his leg as he sort of tramples through a house. Mm. That's all you get. Then later on, it's his footprints on the island while scientists come to investigate. Then finally, you get his head sort of looking over a hill. The people are running up with their pitchforks. Godzilla's over there. They come running, and his head comes up, and they all turn around, screaming, going the other way.
In the original
film. In the original film.
Yeah.
So you get that slow reveal in the original film, but you finally get your full reveal around the 45-minute mark.
Right, okay.
Of the original film. And then you can see it, like he does a full rampage.
Right,
that film. You actually get, it's not like this, the 2014 one, where you know, you get your T's and then they cut away. You get your T's and then they cut away. You know.
Yeah, yeah. And that's very, that's modern American filmmaking in a lot of ways. And they did that a lot in this one, I thought. And I thought they cut away quite a bit.
For King of the Monsters?
In King of Monsters, I saw.
Yeah, but we got that little fight between Ghidorah and Godzilla in the Arctic. I mean,
you did get that one.
If Godzilla had fought Muto in Hawaii, and we actually got, you know, a minute or two of that, I think it would have made all the difference.
Really? Because you wanted that before the grand finale.
Yes. Okay. That is traditional Godzilla structure.
Right, okay.
Godzilla comes, he fights the monster, he gets injured, you know, like this, like the King of the Monsters, or he gets driven away, and finally he comes back for the final battle. That is traditional Godzilla. Gamera 3 is probably the movie most similar to Godzilla 2014, I think, for Japanese kaiju films in structure. And they do that. They give you a quick 2-minute fight early in the film. Gamera fighting not even the main enemy monster. It's just like kind of a side monster. He destroys Shibuya. There's this epic scene. There's fireballs everywhere. And then he's gone for most of the movie until the end fight. And it works. Of course, the human element is way more interesting than 2014. But
I'd like to talk about that. A movie called Godzilla, you're there. Godzilla, King of Monsters, you're not there for the human element.
No.
Generally. But can you talk a little bit about how you felt about the humans in this particular film and how they related to...
The humans in this particular film... You know, I've heard a lot of fans talk about, and I have to agree, that it feels like what we call the Heisei Godzilla movies. There are three series of Godzilla movies from Toho. There's the Showa, which is the first 15.
Right.
Named after the Showa Emperor's reign. Then there's the Heisei, which is from the 80s and 90s up to 1995, which is named after the Heisei Emperor's reign. Now, the Heisei Emperor was still on the throne for the third series, but it got a new name, and we kind of call it the Millennium Series. It's Godzilla 2000
to Godzilla
Final Wars. The Heisei series are kind of bland, to be polite. But they deliver on the monster action. Characters are kind of flat. So Godzilla, King of the Monsters, kind of felt like one of those.
Yeah, see, that to me was what really bugged me.
Oh, yeah.
And again, my personal preference is coming out of this Western mindset of filmmaking. Yeah. That's why I like 2014, is the human element was prominent.
Yeah.
Because I went to a movie called Godzilla.
Yeah.
Why do I care more about the people than I do about this giant lizard, right? But the truth is, that to me was what was carrying the story. Godzilla doesn't usually carry drama.
No.
Other than a wrestling ring, right?
That's correct.
It's like you set up the big fight.
He sparks the drama.
He sparks the drama. He's the cause of the drama, but he's not involved. He's just this thing that blows through town, right?
Yeah.
So with this one, I didn't care about anybody except Serizawa. This is the only character I cared about. It opens with them in 2014, and it's like, oh, we lost our son. And then the motivations just don't make any sense.
No.
Because, you know, all of a sudden the mom's obsessed with taming the monsters because she lost her son, but she brings her daughter in the process, and the dad who's trying to protect them is out hunting wolves.
Yeah.
I'm like, what on earth is going on? Like, this is like, and I remember going, and it's sort of like, oh, I'm worried about mom. Well, why are you with mom? Mom's dealing with nuclear beasts in the first place. You know, and so all this, it felt shoddily written.
Yeah.
And all the characters other than Serizawa just seemed to be out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And just sort of floating through the movie trying to set up the next big ring action, right?
Yeah. It was very much like a 90s era Godzilla movie in that respect. Even Monarch is a lot like what they had in the 90s, the G-Force, the Godzilla Countermeasure Center.
Okay.
Like if you're a fan, you're familiar with it. It's not great stuff, but you're familiar with it. You know where we're going.
Yeah.
But for someone like you who has no background in this, you're like, what is going on?
I like it a lot less now that we've had this conversation of the historical matter of 2014. I'm still reeling from that. I'm like, this is not what I expected us to talk about. And I was prepared to defend my position, but how do I defend that? Oh, yeah, the film's basically racist. And it's like, oh, but it was so good. Now it isn't. I did not know that. But, you know, 2014 Godzilla and even Kong Skull Island They're fun. Skull Island is dumb fun.
I haven't seen Skull Island.
It's fun.
I'm terrible.
It's, well, I mean, you're a Godzilla fan as opposed to a Kong fan.
I should really watch it because they're connected. Well, they're very connected even more, but...
But it's like...
I might be missing some context.
It was fun. I mean, it's not... It wasn't Oscar winning, but I enjoyed it more than I enjoyed Fallen Kingdom when we talked about...
The Kong fights are in the daytime, right?
They are in the daytime.
What a revelation.
Yeah, that's fair. You get to see the beast?
You get to see them.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
How much of an incredible idea would that be in a monster movie?
Okay. All right, that's fair. That's fair.
I mean, even Godzilla King of the Monsters, we have a fight in a snowstorm. What?
Yeah, I know it's fair. But I'm not saying that Kong Skull Island is fine art, but for a monster movie, I enjoyed it because the characters were more interesting. There was a little more engagement and stuff and whatnot.
I was really surprised at King of the Monsters not being like that because I enjoy Krampus.
I haven't seen Krampus.
Okay, I enjoyed his movie. It's like a family.
That's a Christmas horror movie, right?
Dynamics and it's... Yeah, it's a Christmas horror movie.
But it's like a horror comedy or something.
It's a horror comedy, yeah. Yeah, okay. It's a bit silly, but... But there's this family, again, they have all these interpersonal dynamics with, you know, disagreement between the relatives, just like anybody's Christmas.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's well done. That element's well done. And Godzilla King of the Monsters, like, where is that?
Thinking of that, when you talk about the people, let's talk about the monsters. Okay. Because you had said to me before the monsters were our characters too, which is absolutely true. We don't get character development per se. You get a little bit with Ghidorah. You get a little bit of backstory for Ghidorah about why you should care about, you know, basically Hydra. Oh my gosh, that means that the monsters are saying Hail Hydra. Anyway, no, it's like the Avengers. No. So, what did you think the way they portrayed them?
I enjoyed it. Like I said, I had fun. It's only one viewing. Maybe further viewings will raise issues, but on the surface, I had fun. I was glad Ghidorah was from space. That is classic, right back to the 1964 Ghidra the Three-Headed Monster movie. He comes from space.
He's from that long ago.
From that long ago.
Okay.
Yeah. He comes from space in a meteor in that film, actually. Encased in a meteor. And
has he always been the big bad?
Yeah. Every film except one, he's the big bad.
Really? So he's that prevalent in
the
series?
He is Godzilla's arch nemesis. The only time he was good was when Godzilla was bad. In one of the movies where Godzilla was the big bad.
Okay. Okay.
That was 2001's Godzilla, Mothra, King Ghidorah, Giant Monsters All Out Attack. That's the film's title.
Wow. Okay.
But all the rest, he's been the big bad. I guess he's the Joker to Godzilla's Batman. He's gold in the original. I think he's gold in this one, but it was so dark I couldn't tell. Originally, he was going to have rainbow wings, but for some reason they changed the whole thing to gold. That's a fun little fact there.
Interesting.
But yeah, the lightning beams he's spitting, like the energy beams.
Yeah.
Same, exactly the same as the original. He's been doing that since 1964 as well. It usually takes multiple monsters to beat him.
That's kind of a
theme.
Which
always,
but somewhat
usually.
Happens here.
Yeah.
Sort of happens here, but not
not
really.
Not quite, no. But that's it doesn't happen in every movie, but it's like a thing.
That's a common thing.
His first two appearances, it was Mothra, Rodan, and Godzilla, and... The second appearance was Godzilla and Rodan because they didn't have the budget for Mothra, I think.
Which will probably happen now in the next one, now that we know that his head has survived. They'll probably clone a new one.
Oh, there are so many options to go forward with
And it'll
that.
Be Kong and Godzilla teaming up to take
It'll probably
out
be
King
them
Ghidorah.
Teaming up. The director has said there will be a definitive winner, but I think he's talking about he's playing the sleight of hand.
Right.
Because the original King Kong versus Godzilla didn't have a definitive winner. They kind of fell into the ocean and Kong's seen swimming away.
That's common in quote-unquote versus movies.
Yeah.
I think what's going to happen is as Kong and Godzilla get, you know, start their battle, they're going to discover that their mother has the same name, and then they'll just be friends after that. That's what I think is probably the next step for this.
there's a lot of...
Your mother's name is... My mother's, too, his name is... No, sorry, anyway.
Well, there's a lot of ways they can go forward. There's the monster Destoroyah, which was created by the Oxygen Destroyer in the original Godzilla series. So they may bring that monster back as an after effect of the Oxygen Destroyer's use in this film.
Okay.
I don't think so, but it's a possibility.
Right.
Ghidorah's cells could be used to create the genetic monster Biollante. In the original film, it's a cross between Godzilla, a rose, and a human, but you could just play with that formula, right?
Well, I mean, all they have to do is, now they've got the head, all they have to do is put it in a cloning machine nowadays.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, look, we made our own, and...
There is talk of the cyborg Mecha King Ghidorah, but I don't think enough of Ghidorah's body survived for that. That's from the old movies too, from the 90s actually. I don't think they'll go that route. Mechagodzilla has been speculated.
Why would they bring Mechagodzilla in Kong versus Godzilla? That doesn't even make any sense.
There are five super popular monsters in the Godzilla series.
And one of them is Mechagodzilla?
One of them is Mechagodzilla. The others are the ones you've seen. Godzilla, Mothra, Ghidorah, Rodan, and Mechagodzilla. They're the top five.
Oh, okay.
So that's why that's kind of speculative. Also, Mechagodzilla appeared in, I think it was Ready Player One.
He did?
I think it's that one. Where they're in a video game.
Yeah, that's the movie.
Yeah, he did.
Oh.
He is in that. He fights the Iron Giant.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So
yeah,
there's
yeah.
questions as, do they have the rights and they haven't told us? Like, did they, how?
Right.
You know, there's that. So there's lots of options they can go forward with this movie. Yeah.
I thought it was interesting the way that they presented the monsters in this particular film. I like a movie, obviously, that comes with some thematic content. I appreciated the Godzilla King Ghidorah dichotomy they've created there. Rodan and Mothra, it just felt like too many Batman villains at some point to me.
I would
like,
agree. I think it was too many too fast.
They just all sort of showed up so they could do cool things with them, right? Yeah. Like you'd mentioned about the Rodan fight with the airplanes, and that looked cool.
That was cool. I liked the Rodans for that. Let me get on the record. I'd wanted to see Rodan fight jets for years. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. But, I mean, yeah. So
and it was daytime. Notice that fight took place in the daytime. That was, like, the highlight of the movie. Just putting that out there.
But, I mean, like, I am interested very much in how he's used. I felt when I saw Pacific Rim, I'm not a kaiju guy. I love Transformers. I hated what they did with the Transformers movies after the first one until Bumblebee, because eventually Michael Bay just, you know, threw everything out the window and it was just like this one monster thrown up against the next one with, you know, varying degrees of identifying factors. It's like, okay, this gray monster is fighting that gray monster, blah, blah, blah. Look at them fight.
Yeah.
But I mean, the Godzilla series, what I appreciate about it is how they use it to address their worldview. You already sort of talked about, you know, the Western worldview of the use of military force, and which is very clear, you know, now that you say that, talk about, you know, well, what do we need? Guns, lots of guns, sort of philosophy, right?
After the 98 Godzilla, director Kaneko Shusuke, who made Godzilla, Mothra, King Ghidorah, Giant Monsters, All Out Attack, and the Gamera trilogy, the Gamera 90s trilogy, he said the Americans seem unable to accept a creature that can't be put down by their own arms.
Yeah, that's fair. Which is interesting about this one, because this may be the first one I can say in recent memory that they have to humble themselves towards.
Yeah.
To do that. And that was fascinating to me. Is this one, you know, you talk about the Eastern view of kaiju monsters versus the Western view of kaiju monsters. So I thought that is even addressed within the film. I think
to a degree, a little bit.
At one point, Xi Zhang or Zhang Xi, she's talking about it and she says, and they're like, oh, they're dragons. And she says, well, slaying dragons is a Western concept. In the East, it's something more like they're revered and sort of viewed that way. So I was wondering how you, or what you see in that sort of wrestling with the tension of that and how they've put it into a Western view.
Well, again.
Or did they?
Well, if you look back at the history of giant monster movies in the United States, many of them are just animals.
Yeah.
You know, they're animals trying to survive. We even see this in the 98 Godzilla.
And 2014.
In 2014, even to a degree. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, there's lip service to, you know, he's a god, you know.
Yeah.
But it's an animal.
Yeah.
In the way it's portrayed, yeah. This is the first time I think they've actually truly gone all out, Godzilla King of the Monsters, and shifting more towards the more traditional view for kaiju, at least. In the original Godzilla, there's a subplot of tradition versus modernity. That's the word. When Godzilla first appears, he's on this island. I mentioned it earlier. He's on this island, Odo Island, and there's a lot of old-fashioned villagers there. And one really old man says, as soon as the disasters begin, it's Gojira, you know, from the ancient legends. And they used to sacrifice a young girl every year on a raft sort of thing. And he says, we've stopped doing that, and now it's coming.
Which they do in Kong.
They do, okay. I haven't seen Kong, I don't know that, but...
But in the originals, they would do that, too. That's one of the...
The original Kong, they did that.
They sort of hint at that in the 2014, I think, if I remember correctly, that's the plan. It's been a while since I've seen it, but this idea of sacrificing to the beast,
Yeah, well, they do that in the original Godzilla, and when Godzilla first comes ashore, he does so in a storm, and it's not explicitly stated... And it's very subtle, but you almost wonder if he made the storm.
Really?
Yeah. Like I said, nothing...
In
the original film, nothing's explicitly stated. It's just the fact that he comes ashore with a storm gives you this really uneasy feeling. Mm. And then when he does come ashore and they try shooting him and he can't be killed by that, you know, it gives him this very mythical element. He's very much from the beginning he's scientific, but supernatural at the same time. There's this fusion, I think, in Japanese culture of the physical and the spiritual as one. And this carries over into the kaiju realm.
Yeah, that to me is clear in this one.
Yeah.
One of the things I thought was interesting in this film, if you look at the characters too, they almost fall, not entirely, but they almost fall down racial lines in terms of viewing the beast. You know, You've got Kyle Chandler, who is treating Godzilla like an animal to be tracked.
Yeah.
And then you've got Sarazawa, and, you know, his crew.
Yeah.
Who are looking at it and seeing so much more, and, you know, he would be our pet. No, we would be his. And then they laugh.
And they laugh.
You know, that how dare anything mock at the amazing might of humanity that we should submit ourselves to this thing. And of course, I mean, you know, pastorally, like, this is me, right? But there's very clear a false god versus true god. So, like, for crying out loud, King Ghidorah comes out and there's a cross in the foreground and it's not subtle. It's like, it's so prominent. Hey, can you move that out of the way? Because I can't see King Ghidorah.
They took the inspiration for that imagery, I think, from Revelation. Like, that was deliberate.
Really?
That was deliberate. That was imagery-wise.
Well, it had to be deliberate because there's no way that was accidental.
Oops!
I was like, okay.
Didn't you look for the cross before you pointed the camera at that mountain?
Dude, what's wrong with you? Sorry, I must have missed it. King Ghidorah was doing something.
So focused
on
that.
Can we go back on one? No, we don't have money to reshoot that, all right? Just leave it where it is. and then, of course, at the end...
We were going to take that out in post.
Whoops! You know, and then Godzilla is the true... they refer to him as the alpha, right? Yeah. As the true godlike revered creature. But it is interesting to me, the thematic elements in this one are much more heavier towards the psycho-spiritual than in 2014.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that's... because Edwards didn't direct this one. I forget who directed this one.
Michael Dougherty.
So I don't know whether that's just revere... is that revering the original ones, would you say? Or
there is so much from the original ones, it must be.
Yeah.
There's so much.
Because that wasn't even in the case in the 98 version. Anytime America tries to do Godzilla, that seems to be the part we lose.
Yeah.
Is this humility of mankind. Although they also spin it towards more of a naturalistic type of theology in this one, because they make it very clearly about, you know, saving the planet.
Yeah.
In some ways, too. But again, does that go back to the, it's just an animal as well? Like, the back and forth...
I think saving the planet is just what's in vogue right now.
Yeah, it's true.
Mothra has been environmentalist themed, Mothra herself.
Oh, really?
For quite a while. Not
just Mothra? Not the other ones?
Some of the other ones too, but Mothra specifically in 1992, and then she had her own trilogy in the late 90s. They were all very environmental themed.
Right, okay.
It was sort of started from there, so it's not way back to the original Godzilla series, but...
Yeah, because this one ends up being "Save the Monsters, Save the World" by the end, which I thought was ridiculous. I'll be honest, not because of I don't believe in saving the world. That's not. Let's say that.
Do you not believe in saving monsters?
That's not what I said. Oh yeah, and the monsters.
Do you not believe in saving
monsters? I say nuke them. No.
How dare you?
No, that's not what I mean. But I mean it was sort of like, oh, well, Godzilla is now the key alpha, and now that he's the key alpha, the planet has all the green natural goodness weird. That it needs. And
that was really weird.
It was a strange
There mix. Is a scene in Rebirth of Mothra, yeah, first Rebirth of Mothra, 1996, where there's this evil monster who's sort of sucking the energy from the forests to power himself, and he's killing all these forests. And at the end of the movie, Mothra sort of regenerates the forest, flies over them, but it's a throwaway thing.
Hmm.
It's to wrap the movie up nicely. It doesn't have any real weight. You know, it ties into the environmental theme, but it's not like, this is something monsters do. It's just Mothra's magical in those movies, and it's a fantasy, and so be it.
Yeah.
You know, so I was wondering if he took inspiration from that, but that would be the only thing I could think of from the original films that comes remotely close to that.
You know what I would have liked more, and this is shifting gears a little bit, but going back to the idea of themes, there was one line that was spoken that I loved, and I wish they'd explored it more. It was one of the characters speaking to Kyle Chandler and says, sometimes the only way, I think it's Sarah Zawa, sometimes the only way to heal our wounds is to make peace with the demons that created them. Mm-hmm. I love that line, because of course, you know, this is the demon that took his son.
Yeah.
And so now he becomes, you know, by the end of the movie, I expected him to have a sign and, you know, save Godzilla, save Godzilla. you know, I did think that was an appropriate way for him to deal with his grief, but they handled the grief so poorly that I didn't care that he had any in the beginning.
Yeah.
But I think that was an interesting way to look at is he, you know, his journey with Godzilla was so personal in so many different ways. And this idea of making peace with our past by making peace with those that have injured us or hurt us or releasing them. I thought that was a positive idea personally, but I just wish they'd explored it more. There were ideas like that.
Is that the part from the fortune cookie? Or?
Yes, it was. It was Sarah Zawa. That was the best line in the movie.
That was funny.
No, it was a fortune cookie. A really long fortune cookie. That was a good line. It's a good line. I did like the fact that King Ghidorah, they refer to him, you know, we talk about him being the false king, this false godlike setup. They also refer to him as the invasive species. I thought that made sense. You know, I know you said he's an alien, he always was an alien.
Yeah.
But it also added...
It added a level to it,
and it was sort of like domination through... But he doesn't... The reason this hasn't happened before is that he hadn't shown up. And when he showed up, then it was like, now I want this. But the true king of all the monsters has been here the whole time. I thought that was an interesting twist. Godzilla is such a fascinating... It can be such a fascinating concept.
And it drives me nuts that nobody gets it.
It's fair. Except for our wise listeners who are listening to this podcast right now. And
they're sitting there, what is going on?
So am I. And that's how I felt when I was watching that movie last night. What is going on? I still think... I was sitting there, Rodan. It's like he looked like a giant, you know, vulture. I know he's not, and we had this conversation that what he is. I was like, oh, it's boring. Anyway.
Rodan, yeah.
It's unnecessary.
Rodan, I wasn't totally on board with the design. I was a little more on board with it after I saw the film than what I'd seen just the trailers. He does feel a bit like an add-on.
Hmm.
Same with Mothra to a degree. Like, they didn't need to be in this movie plot-wise. They were just like, hey, we can sell more tickets if we put all four of them in.
Yeah.
It felt like that. It did. I'll give you that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. You know what else, going back to what we were talking about before with the monsters, going back to Mothra, there was a throwaway line. I'd like to know what you thought of this, because maybe this applies to what we were talking about before, maybe it doesn't. But when they first see Mothra, they walk in and a person goes, Mother of God. And the guy from Game of Thrones, I forget his name, is the business.
Charles Dance?
Yeah, he goes, she had nothing to do with this. And
I remember that.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting line. So there seemed to be something in that conversation.
But I couldn't tell you what it was.
I don't know what it was.
I don't know.
So again, you see?
Something's missing.
You see? It's not fleshed out. If you're going to get the themes. But that's what I was wondering. If you
caught anything. When he says Mother of God, you can sort of, like, Mothra was kind of a goddess in the original
films. Yeah, like, and
but even this doesn't make sense in that context.
Yeah, she had nothing to do with this. Okay, so
like,
God's woman or Mothra? I don't get what you're trying to say. Yeah. Or is this a nuclear disaster? Did we create this? No, because it's always been here.
I've heard rumors there's a longer cut.
Okay. Okay. So maybe there are some characters that, in it.
Well, that's actually some of the speculation in the fan community. Is that probably they cut some of the character stuff in order to preserve the monster,
Fights, yeah. Well, it was already 2 hours and 11 minutes.
It was a long movie.
Yeah.
So I wish they'd release extended cuts of these things, but I don't think so.
And you know what? Now that I'm thinking of it, maybe that was part of the problem. Okay, this is what I didn't love about the film. Is, again, we lost the character element. But going back to those Transformers films, as they went on, Michael Bay got, his films got longer and longer with grander and grander fight scenes and less characters that you cared about in any way, shape, or form. It became, the shift became off the people.
Yeah.
And you see, growing up watching the show, and I realized Transformers and Godzilla are not the same, although they are cousins.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
they
yeah.
come out of the same sort of Japanese monster kaiju culture. The show that I grew up watching, the movies I have loved, have shown the relationship of the humans to these giant beasts, right? And how they interact.
I would say that stands for the best of the kaiju films, too.
Yeah, see, that
to me, Gamera 3 and the original Godzilla. Yeah.
Yeah, that to me is where it comes in. I you know, again, I'm focusing on Transformers here when I say this, but Bumblebee... I loved the new film Bumblebee, and I did not think, I saw it and I was like, I don't even think I'm going to like this thing. I loved it. And the knock against it, to be honest, was that there wasn't enough Transformer fight action.
Yeah.
But the characters and the relationships between, well, I'll refer to Bumblebee as a kaiju of sorts in some ways, and the girl, is so well developed.
Mm-hmm.
You just, the scenes together just make sense. And they tried to do that here. With Stranger Things girl.
Yeah.
Which I couldn't even tell you her character's name.
I can't tell your character's name either.
Yeah, like, honestly,
her name
she was just totally the daughter of the mother.
Yeah.
And I don't even know the mother's name, really. There's so many characters. Sarah's always the only name that I could even care about. But, I mean, they tried to get there with the scene where she's reaching her hand out to Mothra, which just reminded me of How to Train Your Dragon, but still, which I can't believe you haven't seen those movies. But anyway.
There's a lot of movies I haven't seen.
I know, but the dragon movies, man, you got to see How to Train Your Dragon. Come on. Anyway, not going to have that conversation right now. But you could see they were trying to get more interaction, and they just couldn't get there.
No.
Just couldn't get there. So, I mean, the King of Monsters, the monster action, you want monster action? I mean,
yeah, I think it delivered, and I enjoyed that. Like I said, I thought it was more fun than the last one.
Yes.
But it wasn't necessarily, I don't know if I can even say it. I don't know if I can say it. It was a worse movie than the last one. I did not like the last one.
No, you really hated the last one. I think if you see this one again, I feel like you're going to appreciate it more.
I might.
The King of Monsters? But you were much happier with it.
The problem is, again, Godzilla 2014, like I mentioned before, I referenced, and probably none of your listeners know this, I've mentioned the movie a few times, Gamera 3. 2014 Godzilla felt like it was trying to be Gamera 3 in the way that cuts between the human and monster action at the end of the scene. Gamera 3 does this, and it does it successfully. The two are connected in a way that's really tight. And I haven't been able to see another kaiju film get that. To the way Gamera 3 did. And I see a number of movies trying this, and it just doesn't work, and I don't know why. And 2014 is in that. And again, when they cut that first battle, they cut what balanced Gamera 3.
Right.
From the 2014 Godzilla.
I see what you're saying.
And I think that did tremendous damage.
Here's a question for you, as we start to roll it up a little bit here. What do you think was the real monster in the film? We've talked about this thematically enough. The monster is very rarely the actual monster. So what's the monster?
Perhaps it's unintentionally, but it felt like the mother.
Well, her daughter says you're the monster.
She does call her
out.
But
why is she the monster? Why do you think that?
Because she's killing millions of people with no good reason. There's zero justification. I don't think there can
well, not
be.
She's not.
I can't think there. I don't think
she's not committing genocide. Like the
yeah, she is
not intentionally.
She let all the the monsters did kind of. Ghidorah kind of called them out a little in advance, but the
plan
was to let them all out.
That is true.
So she
I
was
don't know what the
genocide.
End game is for that. What was her end game? Like she was going to have 17 pets. Like what
restoring nature, killing off humans.
Oh right,
they were eco terrorists.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it. I never thought of that.
It's kind of ironic in a movie with environmentalist themes, but...
See, that's this movie.
The group, I will say, the villain group did feel like something out of the 60s Godzilla movies.
Okay.
A lot of the older Godzilla movies have this subplot with these villains that are doing something nefarious, and they're kind of, they're kind of fun. Godzilla versus Monster Zero, which is where the name Monster Zero in the film this movie came from. It's Ghidorah, even in that movie. Has these aliens, and they have this nefarious plot to take over the Earth with monsters. And,
right.
And they are a blast. Hmm. That movie's a ton of fun. There is very little monster action, but that movie is a ton of fun. There's Red Bamboo in Godzilla versus the Sea Monster. They're like this terrorist organization. They're making nuclear weapons on this island, and they run around the island shooting at the good guy. You know, it's just a whole blast. These villains really felt like out of the 60s movies. Kind of silly and fun, but nefarious at the same time.
Yeah, mustache twirling.
Yeah, villains, they were like that. I enjoyed that.
They were fine.
As a throwback, but I think, again, the main villain only had like a few lines, right? Like, he seems like a great
villain. Everybody only had a few lines in this movie.
There's too many characters. But he could be a lot of fun. I think he could make a fun villain. Just silly, but fun.
Yeah. He's fun in Game of Thrones.
I hope they do that in Kong.
Kong. You know, to me, talking about the monster of the film, to me the monster of the film is control. It's attempt, humanity's pride to believe that they can somehow control.
True.
Wild, I would say nature, because it takes that, the Western bent is more the naturalistic, the Eastern bent is more spiritual. This idea to contain the gods and make them do our bidding. And even the fact that they laugh at Sarazawa, you know, and but see, that's sort of what the mother's doing, is she wants to unleash them and control the end.
Of that.
Yeah, I still don't really know what her end game was.
Most upfront. Yeah. She built a stupid device.
She built a device to control them, and she I only meant to do it one at a time. So why did you start with the biggest one, huh? Yeah. Why did you start with the one that was an alien? What's wrong with you? I love Vera Farmiga.
Let's just wake this thing up.
It was such a talented cast, and then So, I mean, to me, I think that's what I felt the film was trying to get at with the idea of control being...
And it kind of goes back to the 2014 film.
Yeah.
You know, the arrogance of man is thinking nature is in our control when it's the other way around.
Yeah,
That's the 2014 film.
Almost Jurassic Park-y in that sense. Yeah. But this time takes a more psycho-spiritual sort of aspect to it.
Yeah.
This idea of the role we play in the universe is one of humility as opposed to domination.
Yeah.
Which you could take it from an environmentalist theme, you could take that from theological, spiritual theme. Either way, there's sort of this tension there. But I mean, she was, again, like, I don't even really know what she was doing there, except that she just wanted to release these things and have them do whatever she wanted them to do.
Yeah.
Well, Benjamin, this has been fun. Is there more you want to talk about?
I think we got most of it. I mean, we do have about 30 more movies we could go through if you want.
Well, this seems like a good place to wrap.
In 1955, we never did do the histories of Rodan and Mothra.
For Kong versus Godzilla, we'll have you back. You can do that then.
Histories of Rodan and Mothra.
But this seems like a good place
for
us to wrap up. Let's do Screen It or Skip It.
Well, I'm going to say Screen It because I had fun.
Okay.
But I know why a lot of people will say skip it, so watch the trailer and decide for yourself.
That's fair. I guess it depends on what you want.
Yeah.
I'm going to say skip it, and I do... yeah, I know. I'm sure that's shocking to you. But if you want me to be excited about the monster action, you've got to give me a reason to believe that there's something at stake, and the human lives are at stake. But if you don't care about any of the human lives in this film, then the stakes are very low. It's like, uh-oh, then they're just going to get out and do their monster things. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I see how the tone is totally different. I would say that I really like the 2014. You killed that movie for me. Thanks a lot. I've
destroyed it now, right?
You've destroyed Godzilla for me. And it wasn't for any of the reasons we've ever discussed. We've had this conversation dozens of times.
It's a big topic.
I know, but you've never talked about it. Now I just feel bad forever liking it. Steve likes that 2014 Godzilla.
When you asked me who's the real monster of this, I was going to say Gareth Edwards.
I was afraid you were going to say me.
No, I was going to say Gareth Edwards. But we weren't talking about that movie. So, okay.
What movie was it? Oh, I think it's Godzilla 2000, where it ends with, well, I guess it's because that Godzilla is in all of us. It's like, that was the first time I went, what? But, yeah, no, thanks so much, Ben. You know, I appreciate you, and I love having these conversations, so thank you for coming on.
You're welcome.
And for you at home, a reminder, you can find us wherever you find your podcasts, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play. You can find us on your Alexa device via Stitcher. And if you go to the website, screenfish.net, and go to the podcast page, you can download Fishing for More, which are small group questions that you can have with your Monster Mash friends that you see the film with. But thanks so much, Ben. This has been
fun. You're welcome. And watch Shin Godzilla. It's infinitely better than these two.
I've heard that.
Probably from me.
Yeah, that's where. And for you at home, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.